Welcome to the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth. I know many of you. If I don't know you, I'll introduce myself. My name is Erin Starr White. I'm an assistant curator of education here at the Modern, and I train and manage our docent pool. And so it's a lovely job. I'm really, really lucky. Today, I have the opportunity to give the first public tour of this exhibition, and that's a really exciting thing. For me, this is a show by an artist that we've all seen before. If you're familiar with the museum, back in 2008, we had what we call a focus exhibition of this artist's work. We had three pieces. We got to buy one of those pieces. We'll look at one of that piece that we bought today. So we have the artist in our collection. The artist's name is Kehinde Wiley, and he was born in 1977. He's only 38 years old. This is a 14-ish year kind of early to mid-career retrospective, and the amount of work that Wiley has produced is pretty phenomenal. He's very prolific. There are several series that we'll look at this afternoon. As with any exhibition, there's so much work, we're not going to get to it all, and there are going to be things that you just say, oh, Erin, can we please stop? And I'll say, no, I'm sorry, we have an hour. So the idea is come back as often as you want. We're free every single Sunday this year. We love to have huge crowds on Sundays. It's really nice to see so many people in the galleries. And the show is open through the beginning of January, so you have lots of opportunities to come. And I'm going to take this chance to plug a program called Sundays with the Modern. This is the first Sunday of most months. We bring in an outside speaker to talk about the special exhibition. And so, let's see, we're in September, October the first Sunday, November and December. We will have guest speakers come. It's at 1 o'clock, and it's a wonderful way to get a new perspective on the show. So as we go through, we have a large group, but I think we can still have some sort of conversation. I don't want this to be just me regurgitating a lot of information for you. I want to hear what you have to say about this work. Let's go ahead and start with a painting in the first gallery. This painting is really going to set us up, showing us a lot of the visual devices, the themes that Wiley uses for the remainder of his career up until this present day. We're going to go around this wall and just look at the third painting on the right, if you'll follow me. I don't want to feel like I'm edging you out. We're going to look at this painting, but feel free to keep talking about it. I just didn't want to kind of frighten you.
Are
as
you
I come
ready
up.
To draw it?
Yeah, just a little tour.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we're in front of the last painting that Wiley made while he was a graduate student at Yale University. Wiley's path to Yale University is quite remarkable. I mentioned he was born in the late 70s. He's born in South Central Los Angeles to a single mother. His mother was Californian, African American. His father is from Nigeria. He's the youngest of six children. He is a fraternal twin. Just prior to the birth of he and his twin brother, his father goes back to Nigeria, so he never meets his father. The experiences that his mother provides for he and his siblings are amazing. She is studying at this time for her master's degree in linguistics at UCLA while she's raising six children. Wiley talks about them being very, very poor. They don't have the money to do a lot of things that she would want to, but she's able to find wonderful drawing classes for her children. She sees that Wiley and his brother have a special interest in art. She arranges for them to travel 2 hours on a bus to Pasadena to go to art museum education programs. So he is steeped in art history from a really young age and loves it. He talks about going to the Huntington Library in California, walking around these gorgeous halls where all of these amazing paintings are hung. But one thing, all these paintings are paintings of white people. There's not one person in these paintings that looks like Wiley looks. And as a kid, he thinks, what is going on with this? He's living in American culture, he's growing up in this culture, and he's seeing that people of color in our culture are not treated with, I don't want to say always, but more often than we would like to admit, are not treated with the same level of respect and dignity that Caucasian members of the culture are treated with. So this is always in his mind, he's always thinking about this. He is living in a world where things don't quite match up. So he graduates high school, he gets his bachelor's degree in California, he goes to Yale to study painting. If you're familiar with the American program, MFA program as a whole, Yale is it. This is where you want to go, especially if you're going to be a painter. He talks about, again, this where things aren't quite matching up. He is a student at Yale. A lot of the student body is Caucasian. He goes off campus into New Haven, and he's seeing people that look like him, people that have black and brown skin. He feels, okay, I'm at home, I'm comfortable. And then he tries to go back on campus, and the campus police try to stop him on more than one occasion, and they ask him what he's doing there, as if he doesn't belong on this campus. So all these experiences are happening and shaping the way he sees American life, showing really the reality of American life. And he talks about everything being color-coded. And when he said this, he was talking about painting. Everything's color-coded. So for instance, this background, this really beautiful, rich green color, is actually from Martha Stewart's 1999 wall paint collection. It's called Seafoam Green. He loves these colors. As we go through the show, you're going to see it's all about this really amped up color, really rich and saturated hues, and they're gorgeous. He talks about this tie, this gentleman wearing this really beautiful kind of saffron orange tie. He links that to consumerism. In our culture, you go to McDonald's or Burger King, everyone's trying to get your attention with these bright colors. They're trying to elicit some kind of hunger in you. And so he includes that in this painting. But let's talk about the subject matter of this painting. We have presumably an African-American young man. He's wearing a very nice suit. His hair has taken on a life of its own. I'm assuming it was once an Afro hairdo, and it's become this beautiful kind of vine-like, very organic sculptural structure, taking over the painting, taking over him. It's coming over his arms and his chest, almost like a smoke or a fog coming in. This painting sets up so many of the things that Wiley is interested in. If you ask someone familiar with Wiley's work, what is his deal? Just give me a soundbite, give me like a two-line thing. They'll say, well, he takes European portraits of wealthy aristocrats, these landed gentry that are always shown with all of their possessions, their horses, their land, their wives, everything to show how powerful they are. He's taking out those white sitters and putting in contemporary African-American young men. That is what he became very well known for. We'll see that he breaks out of that pattern, but for a little while we're going to look at those works. This, to me, is where this starts. I also want to point out the decorative element of this young man's hair takes on this wonderful, almost surreal quality in the backgrounds of Wiley's paintings. He will always use a pattern, perhaps a textile pattern, a wall painting pattern from the period that the original portrait is taken from, and he puts the two together. So I see Wiley's work as really showing the changeability, the malleability of different types of identity. One would be gender identity. We'll talk a lot about how he's taking female sitters and making them male. We'll talk about the kind of the construction of ethnic identity. There's really no such thing as race. We use this word race, and there's a human race, but there's not different races within this one race. They're different ethnicities, different cultures. So he's looking at the structuring of that. What makes someone Caucasian? What makes someone African American? People in one group, do they identify with the group that they're born into, or do they identify with a different group? So we'll look at that a little bit. He's also pointing to the changeability of time. He's taking very, very old portraits and mashing them together with contemporary sitters and kind of shifting the way we're looking at time and the linear quality of time. Before we move on, I want to also point out this lovely, very small portrait, and you're welcome to get closer. Wiley graduates from Yale. He earns a residency at a place called the Studio Museum in Harlem, and this is a place that is really like a lab for young painters, young artists. They're working in this very, very constructive environment, very nurturing. Thelma Golden is the director of the Studio Museum in Harlem. She finds young African-American artists and nurtures their careers. So many amazing artists have come out of this residency program. He's here for a year, 2001 to 2002. He's walking around the streets of Harlem one day and he finds this crumpled up piece of paper. He unfolds it and there is a mugshot of this young man. And so on the mugshot there are things like not his name, but his number. He ceased to become an individual. Suddenly he is a number in a system that no one is paying much attention to. So Wiley takes this mugshot, and within this image, which is grainy and photocopied, he sees this beautiful young man who isn't quite grown up yet. We see him and we see a sense of vulnerability. There's a softness to him. The way that he's painted his skin, there's just this, he looks to me a little bit angelic. There's this sense of innocence in this young man's eyes. He doesn't give us his name. He calls it Mugshot Study. This is the title of the piece. So as we go through the show and look at different examples of Wiley's work, I want you to think about how the sitters often were not given their true identities, their names. Yet we gain a sense of who they are by their bodily positions, by the look in their eyes, by the way that Wiley has taken their personality and put it onto the canvas. We get a sense of who these people are on a certain level. Later on, we'll see that he does start adding their real names. As I look at this work, I often think, where are these men now? And later we'll look at some women, where are they now? Are we really getting a true view of who they are, or is this just a mask? And these are questions that I don't have an answer to. I'm just putting them out there. I want to go next to this portrait right over here to our right. And all of a sudden, we have this monumental portrait that looks quite European. What are some of the things that are telling us this might be a European portrait? Anybody want to shout out what you're seeing? Bonaparte. We're seeing the name Bonaparte, so that would maybe point to Napoleon, right? Anybody else? There's a horse, there's a rider. The background is this kind of brocade pattern. What about this frame? This is so ornate. This takes you to the Louvre Museum. This takes you to a place that shows big fancy paintings. In the French Academy, every year, this is in the 18th, 19th century, they have a salon. And this is a place where they hang more paintings than you can imagine in the salon style. So they start at the top and just hang the wall full of pictures. And within these exhibitions, there's a definite hierarchy. The most important type of painting is history painting. And these are grand epic paintings. If you think of Eugène Delacroix's Wrath of the Medusa, where Delacroix is showing us this really grisly scene of men that are dying and cannibalizing each other on this raft, but it's gorgeous. Their limbs are beautiful, even though they're not attached to a body. There's an element of passion and of grandeur. That's the most important type of painting in the French system. Portraiture is next, and then under portraiture you have landscape painting, you have still life painting. They're just not quite as cool in this system. Portraiture, though, is a wonderful vehicle to portray people like Napoleon in their best light. So what Wiley does is he comes across this way of working with his sitters. First of all, he goes onto the streets of Harlem, and he finds young men that are somehow, they strike him. Perhaps they have a very strong jawline, or they're very attractive, or muscular, and have a great presence. He's finding these African-American young men, and he's going up to them, and he would wear his Yale sweatshirt so that he looked even less threatening. And he would, because if somebody goes up to you and they're like, okay, let's pretend you're my subject, hey, can I paint you? This is what I've done. And you're going to say, I don't know. I'm in New York City. I've got my guard up. I don't think so. So he's trying to make himself look very friendly and approachable. He's going up to young men. Most of them say, No, I don't think so. But some people say, I would love to be a sitter for you. They that day go up to the studio, and he has this array of art history textbooks. They flip through the books together, and the sitter chooses the portrait that they want to be inserted into. So this sitter chose a portrait of Napoleon Bonaparte crossing the Alps. This portrait has many interesting things happening. I want to start off by saying, is the relationship between the horse and the sitter an accurate one? If not, did you notice that when you first looked? It looks like a pony, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. And this is actually the way that Delacroix, who painted the original, painted this. Napoleon needs to look, he's a tiny man, he needs to look mighty and strong and brave. He's leading an army into battle. So you have to make his trusty steed appear as if it's able to hold him, but it's not overpowering him. So we have that going on. We also have this young man. He's not wearing what the 19th century sitter would have worn. He's wearing what he wore that day when Wiley saw him on the street. He's got his Timberland boots. He's got his camouflage pants. There's a few elements of Napoleon's garb still there. He's got his starter wristband. He's very hip. The look on his face is very proud. He's in charge. So remember, these young men are looking at the portraits and then emulating what the sitter is trying to convey to the original audience. So I talked briefly a minute ago about how Wiley is kind of complicating male, female, black, white, now, the past. Here he's made the sitter very virile, very masculine. I think a really nice balance to that is this horse. This horse, to me, seems very feminine. We've got this gorgeous mane. It looks like the horse just had its hair did. It's hair done. That was not good English. These gorgeous ringlets, they look like they've been dyed. What we have here, if you can get closer, which I invite you to, there's these little squiggles on the canvas. These are actually sperm cells. And they're floating over this brocade pattern. Some of the squiggles are coming up over the man. A little bit of the brocade is coming up over the horse. Just like that early portrait I showed you where the hair was taking over the sitter, the backgrounds more and more will take over the sitter. Wiley talks about the backgrounds for him representing nature, this nurturing aspect of Mother Nature. And I think that's really, really interesting to think about. So we also have a frame. This frame is not just mail order frame. This is a frame designed by Wiley, and we have some really interesting elements. We have down here and here these egg-shaped forms that Wiley thinks of as ovaries. So we have this balance to the sperm cells, the masculine, the ovaries, the feminine. We also have up here at the top, this is the only self-portrait, well, I think he does this three times in the show, that you'll see of Wiley. That's Wiley's face. And I'm not making this up. He talks about the top being a vaginal form. He's coming out of this vaginal form into our space, definitely presiding over the painting. I do want to point out, Wiley is homosexual. This is not something that he talks about a lot in his work, but a lot of critics have kind of leveled at him that he's only picking these young men to seduce them, to take advantage of them. I don't think that's the case at all. I think that he finds these men arresting and appealing, and he wants to capture their likeness and capture their essence in these paintings. He has a really good eye. He has a really good eye for personality. He has a really good eye for mixing patterns and colors, and you'll see that throughout the exhibition. Are there any questions? Mm-hmm. They're in there. Yes, yes. They're interacting. Yeah. Let's do one more question. Yeah. That's a great question. Carol asked if he's painting the sitter first and then the background, if someone is helping him. Early on, he painted some of his own backgrounds, that's my understanding, as well as the sitter. Later, we're going to look at works where the backgrounds are so ornate and so detailed. He does have assistants, and we'll talk about that system of assistants. I do want you to look at the paint handling, how he's painting the flesh of the sitter, And as we go forward in time, you will see how he really makes leaps and bounds and becomes much more proficient at painting flesh, specifically non-white flesh. He talks about, you know, as an art history student, all you see are white people in paintings. That's all you get to study. That's all you get to kind of sketch and paint after. Then you get to graduate school, and you have life drawing classes, and most of the models are white. So you get really good at painting white skin. He said it took him quite a while to get comfortable and get really proficient at painting skin that was not white. And you'll see that again as we go through the show. We are going to talk a little bit about Michael Jackson behind us, because you probably noticed it and maybe have some questions about it. So let's just turn around and go to that painting. Here we have a portrait of someone that's probably very familiar to you. This is Michael Jackson. This is not from the series that I just showed you. The series that I just showed you is from called the Rumors of War series. And this is during the time when America is invading Iraq quite often. And this was on Wiley's mind. Current events are on Wiley's mind. This is actually one of the only commissioned portraits that Wiley has painted. Unbelievably, Michael Jackson calls him up one day and says, "Hello, Kehinde Wiley, this is Michael Jackson." And Wiley just thinks it's a joke and I think hangs up on him. He doesn't take him seriously. Michael Jackson calls him back, they get in touch. Turns out Michael Jackson went to the Brooklyn Museum, saw the painting we just discussed, which is owned by the Brooklyn Museum, fell in love with it, and asked Wiley if he would paint his portrait. And so a really lovely relationship ensues. Evidently they sent, I don't know that they ever met in person, but they sent images back and forth. They talked about, you know, who do you want to be portrayed as? So Michael Jackson settles on King Philip II of Spain. This is an equestrian portrait. Here we have something very different. We don't have kind of an all-over pattern behind the horse and the sitter. We have a somewhat naturalistic landscape, which would have been from the original. What are some things that you noticed about Michael Jackson and his horse? Is there anything that seems a little bit off or interesting or strange to you? Okay, what's two different colors? The horse is two different colors. That could be a shadow effect, but you're right. Also, the two little putti at the top, the little angels, one is a little bit darker than the other. Do most horses have beautiful My Little Pony bows in their hair? No. No, this horse is hyper-feminized. It's prancing. Someone yesterday said it looks like it's a carousel horse. It's very idealized. Michael Jackson himself is very idealized. If you think about all of the popular culture associations we have with him, he lived on Neverland Ranch. It was kind of a fairy tale. His life was anything but a fairy tale, especially toward the end, but there was this idea of him living in this kind of dream. There's one more thing I want to point out. The armor that Michael Jackson / King Philip II is wearing was very important to Jackson. They talked a lot, Wiley and Jackson talked a lot about armor being something that keeps you safe and keeps the world out. And I thought that was so telling in thinking about Jackson and really all the troubles that he had, keeping his personal life in, keeping the paparazzi out, and things just got more and more complicated as his life continued. Unfortunately, Jackson died before this painting was completed. Wiley finishes it, and it's now in a collection in Germany. So take advantage of seeing this here while you can. So Michael Jackson is definitely, I would say, an icon of our culture. I want to take you to the next gallery, and we're going to look at some very different icons. We'll just go this way. Yeah. It could be. Yeah. We're going to go right here to the right and look at these beautiful golden pieces. So now we have something completely different. We've left these grand portraits of these young men, and we have these small icon-like portraits. These are actually based on Byzantine icons, which are very precious, very intimate. This really tiny scale invites you to get closer, which I invite you to get closer. You're welcome to look. Look at the level of detail. Wiley is painting on wood. Before he puts the oil paint down, he's putting down a layer of 22 karat gold leaf. And he's using the tiniest of brushes. He's painting these not on a huge wall with a ladder, but maybe on a little table or putting them on his lap and painting them. So they have a very different feel. So the original